Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, April 19th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, I hear the pubs are open in England. Is this a rumor or is it true?
The pubs are open. We're just not allowed to go inside them.
So how do you get the beer out? You have to...
Well, fortunately, it's not rained for about a month, so the weather is cooperating.
All right. So nice. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. Things are still much calmer and shut down here in France. I think they're talking about maybe mid-May for reopening of outdoor kind of, restaurants and things. So we'll see how that goes. But that's awesome. Do you have the skills needed to succeed in your MBA? Harvard Business School Online's Core Business Essentials program is an MBA prep course that offers immersive, real-world learning, 100% online. Prepare for the classroom with the program Harvard Business School offers to incoming students. Visit hbsonline.co today. I guess the other thing I wanted to ask you is, anything you want to share from the last week? Because, as always, you have your finger on the pulse of what candidates are talking about. And I realize that we're now in this sort of phase of candidates thinking about where they're going to go, but also some round three stuff is happening, right?
Yeah, I mean, last week, as an example, Wharton released its round three interview invites, and a larger chunk year on year of round three seems to be focused at the top schools on these sort of deferred admissions type programs. So we saw quite a few folks applying to that program at Wharton getting interview invites last week, for example. So we're seeing a little bit of that activity. What typically happens in round three, as you know, Graham, the cycle's just going to be much shorter. So whereas maybe in round one and round two, you had to wait a month or 6 weeks to get an interview invite signal, in round three, because there's less candidates and so forth, it's typically 2 or 3 weeks and schools are already starting to roll out those decisions. So a little bit of round three activity, which is good. We're also seeing a lot of activity on Decision Wire, folks debating their choices and getting some really good feedback actually from the community itself, as well as our colleague Elliot sort of really weighing in pretty heavily on that channel at this point. And hence why sort of today and the last couple of weeks of wiretaps, we look at two Decision Wire entries rather than one, and sort of really, I think it's really it's an interesting time of year as folks debate the options that they have.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to say the exact same thing about how a lot of these round three candidates who are reporting in, whether it's an interview invite or just indicating they've applied, are deferred enrollment candidates, which, I guess it was inevitable. But I actually was speaking for a work-related project to an undergraduate who applied to, a bunch of deferred enrollment programs the other day. And it seems like this is increasingly on the radar. And why not, right? If you're a college student, the idea of locking up your MBA spot in advance is pretty darn appealing. So I get it. But yeah, we'll see as all this stuff continues to evolve. Over on the website, beyond the activity with LiveWire for round three or Decision Wire as people mull over their decisions, we've also continued to roll out these real humans pieces in mostly the kind of automotive, pharma, and consumer goods domains. And I think last week we featured someone from Johnson & Johnson. Perfect timing, right? I mean, they've been in the news. Obviously, they have one of the vaccines. Yeah. There's been some controversy about their vaccine, but, that's been interesting to see. And then we also did a candidate who works at Nissan, the automotive company. So more of those are coming. I think the editorial team will get angry at me if I say what companies we have, but I'm really excited. I just saw the list of what's to come, and there's just a lot of good consumer goods companies, as well as I think some more automotive and pharma. So stay tuned. We're just those are fun to read, to hear about the actual jobs that people with an MBA go on to have. And not all these folks are just graduated. Some of them are a few years into their career, so you can really get to see the trajectory that people are on. The other thing I wanted to call your attention to is that today, when this podcast airs, we're releasing a piece about what to expect in the 2021 2022 admissions cycle. And that was, I think, that piece came out of a lot of discussion on the website over on Livewire. It was a pinned post where people were kind of debating, like, what to expect. So look out for that. I'm sure that that's going to be a fun read. And yeah, it was cool to see that discussion happening on the site that led to that.
Yeah, no, brilliant. And I hopefully Elliot's weighed in on that piece, because I think he had a lot of insight to add.
Yeah, I can't remember if he's quoted. Well, we'll see. It's coming out. It should be on the site as people listen to this. There's definitely a quote. I know I weighed in. I think Elliot may have too. So the other thing I wanted to mention is that we have this event coming up. It's closing in fast. April 28th. It's a Wednesday. Noon Eastern, we're going to sit down with the heads of recruiting, heads of MBA recruiting at JP Morgan and at Bain & Company. And I know Mike, our colleague, tells me there may be another company joining as well. It's a mystery company. I don't know who it's going to be. But we're going to talk all about jobs in banking and consulting. And, you know, if there are other company is from another industry, we'll talk about that too. But it's a great opportunity for both, you know, early applicants as well as those admitted to business school to learn a bit about career tracks. And, you know, whether that's because you're trying to figure out your career plan and want to know more to kind of help flesh out your essays as you explain your career goals to a school, or whether you're just trying to figure out, okay, I'm heading off to business school, I'm dying to work at Bain, what do I do to make sure that happens? Like, this is going to be a really fun event. And so stay tuned. You can, I believe, sign up now on the website. I think the ads are running, and you'll see, you can just click register and get that taken care of. But Alex, I'm looking forward to that. It's, again, it's a new area, as I've said, for us, but it should be a lot of fun to kind of connect with some of these employers.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's not going to be very, very popular, quite frankly. Those are two top companies. And if you're applying for an MBA, they for maybe 50 or 60% of candidates, those companies are going to be on their radar. So yeah, no, congratulations for putting this together.
Yeah, it'll be fun. One other thing I wanted to mention is that the Oregon New Venture Championship is an annual business plan competition hosted by University of Oregon. It's out of their Lundquist College of Business. And they basically have student teams from graduate programs around the world converging for a week-long event of pitches, feedback, and practice as candidates turn their dreams into destiny. Basically, this NVC works to educate, inspire, and empower future entrepreneurs. And this year's event will be held virtually, surprise, surprise, and viewing is open to anyone interested in keeping up with the competition. And the competition actually kicks off on April 21st. So that's just in a handful of days. So I really recommend people check this out. For more information and to view all the action, you can visit business.uoregon.edu/NVC. So that should be fun. I always love these, you know, a lot of the business schools do these kinds of things. But what's interesting about the Oregon one is that it's open to like the world. So it's not just like a bunch of local candidates, you know, kind of presenting their business plans and stuff. So this is kind of an interesting event. I'm going to tune in and encourage our listeners to do the same. Speaking of tuning in, Alex, we're going to keep doing our Clubhouse events Thursdays at noon Eastern. So we've got one coming up this Thursday. I had a blast last week. We got, I want to say, 5 or 6 candidates up on stage with us talking about their candidacies and their dilemmas and how to, you know, where they should apply and even when. And so that was a lot of fun. We'll do it again this week.
Yeah. No, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I will say, we might have to adjust the time, Graham. I have a bit of a conflict, but we can talk about that off the air.
Okay.
Directly. But actually having these Clubhouse events, I'm really enjoying them because, I mean, it's really cool, I think, doing, you know, commenting on the ApplyWire entries to try to guide folks. It's really cool talking about candidates from the ApplyWire on these podcasts. I think that's really cool. But to be able to interact directly with the candidate in meaningful conversations, that's what Clubhouse is allowing us to do. And I think each week we're doing this, we're getting more meaningful conversations. And like you said, last week's Clubhouse meeting, we had 3, 4, or 5 candidates sort of sharing some concerns, some questions and so forth. And we were able to to have really good conversations. So yeah, I'm really enjoying that, Graham, and let's see how it develops.
Yeah. So the other thing is, speaking of interacting with our listeners and with applicants and things, you know, we didn't get any reviews or ratings over the past week on the podcast. So I was feeling a little down, but then I saw we got a couple of emails to our info@clearadmit.com email address. And these are Wiretaps listeners. And so the first one was actually from the candidate that, I don't know if you remember, we covered a candidate last week who was a deferred enrollment candidate. And we were a little down on his candidacy because he comes from an overrepresented population, kind of Indian male. So he sent us a nice note though. He said, "Alex and Graham, thanks a lot for covering my profile on the latest episode of Wiretaps. I had a lot of great insights hearing you guys discuss my profile. I will be applying for deferred programs. I've already done 4 out of the 7 applications and hope to hit on at least one of them. As Graham or Alex, I'm not too sure, mentioned, I will definitely give it another shot after a few years if I don't get accepted into my top priority school this time. Thanks and regards," and I won't say his name because I don't know if he wants to be public, but he also said, "P.S., your assumption was right. I am a male," with a little smiley face. So, because we had guessed Indian male, kind of IT background sort of thing. So, in any event, just nice to hear from the folks that we cover. Yeah, and then I don't know if you had any other thoughts. We were a little down on his chances, even though he has a stellar profile. I just think it's sort of that overrepresented piece that we wondered how deferred enrollment plays into. But nice to hear from that candidate. The last thing, Alex, and then we can get into the Wiretaps portion, is, you know, we ran the March Madness bracket competition of MBA employers, and everyone knows Google won. They eked out a victory over Bain. But one cool tidbit is that I don't know if all of our listeners know, but we had a bracket competition where before we started, you could predict the whole, the whole bracket. And if you were the winner, I think we gave out a couple $100 or something. It was like an Amazon card or something. And so there was a winner. And I don't know how this person predicted the whole bracket, because there were a couple of upsets and, you know, some things that we didn't expect, but this person actually, called it. And they sent us a note after realizing or being notified that they'd won. And the note read, "In a funny turn of events, I was previously featured by Clear Admit on the 118th podcast episode. I come from a slightly less standard MBA job function and didn't work with an admissions consultant, so the podcast provided really helpful guidance to me to understand more about the programs and the admissions process. In the end, I will be attending my top choice in the fall, MIT Sloan." So, I guess it's not surprising, Alex, when you think about the fact that the same 5 people who listen to the show are probably the ones that voted in the bracket competition. but no, that was really cool. Very good to hear that someone who won actually was featured on the show. So very cool. And I wish her the best of luck. There's a little article that we put up on the site about the victor. And so, yeah, very, very cool stuff to hear from some of our listeners.
Yeah, and many congratulations getting into Sloan. That's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, you can say that again. So let's see, should we move on and get into the Wiretaps? We've got a lot to cover today.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so this is Wiretaps candidate number 1. So this is an ApplyWire entry, and it's a candidate who's going to apply this coming summer and looking to attend in the fall of 2022. They have 5 schools on their target list, and those schools are Columbia, Harvard, LVS, MIT, and Stanford. This candidate is currently a Navy officer, and they are in the Australian Navy, I guess, and they want to work in consulting. They're looking at Bain, BCG, or McKinsey as targets. GMAT score is an astronomical 770, and their GPA 3.74. They have 5 years of experience. They're located in Sydney, and they mention in the notes they're currently serving, you know, as an Australian Navy intelligence officer with experience leading cyber operations. They also indicate that they have been published in defense journals, and they contribute to a military strategy blog. They serve as a gender advisor on deployments. They play guitar and speak German. And they want to use the MBA to transition, obviously, into consulting. They said that their goal is HBS, as the case method and focus on decisive leadership appeals to them. Plus, they feel like veterans do well there. So, Alex, what do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, frankly, I chose this candidate because I just wanted everyone to know the quality of folks we have on our site.
Yeah.
I mean, this candidate just seems to check all the markers. Super. I mean, obviously, their numbers are ridiculously outstanding. Navy officer, presumably done well. As a service person in the Navy, working in sort of cyber security, cyber operations. So, I mean, the work that they're doing has got to be fascinating, I would imagine. That's super topical in the world in which we live, as we know. And they're from Australia, which is not an overrepresented pool of candidates. So their goals are a little standard, which is fine. I mean, they want to go MBB and then go sort of general management, basically leadership in an organization. Aerospace defense sector would sort of align with sort of military experience, so that makes sense. Their extracurriculars seem on the mark. I think with great sort of execution on their applications, Graham, they will have some great choices. I basically chose this candidate just to show off.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, it's hard sometimes when we look at these candidates, if they do have a really, you know, terrific profile, you have to kind of think, well, okay, well, what could go wrong? What do they need to do? And so I was really scratching my head trying to think about, like, what to tell this person. And I did actually come up with a few things that I wanted to emphasize with them. And I thought, you know, that the extracurriculars they do, for instance, that are non-military related might actually carry more weight than those that are, in the sense that, I mean, it's terrific that they're involved in a strategy, you know, military strategy blog, and that they write in defense journals. I'm not discounting that. But I think that one of the things that admissions officers might look for, especially at the very top schools, is the kind of well-rounded nature of this candidate. And so, you know, the fact that they speak German and play guitar, I think might be something to bring to the fore. I also think military candidates sometimes risk being a little one-dimensional. Like, often that's all they're doing. And it's understandable, right? You don't get points taken off because you're deployed in some remote environment where you can't, you know, go to a soup kitchen at the weekend or even go cycling or have any real hobbies, right? So I think that's totally understandable. But in so much as you have those other hobbies, I think bringing them out is great. The other thing that stood out to me is I'm fine with this candidate targeting consulting, MBB. Like, that makes sense. It's a great way to transition and utilize what you learn in business school, you know, as you're kind of making this move from military to the private sector. What I would encourage them to think long and hard about, though, is the long term. And they do mention, you know, they want to get into general management, ideally at a large company. And they wrote possibly aerospace or defense. And I would say, if I were them, I would make it probably aerospace and defense, or try to link it, or even cybersecurity or cyber related stuff. I just think, to the extent that they can link their background to their future long-term plans, it'll be more palatable to the admissions reader. And then the other thing, you and I both were like, hey, why isn't Wharton on this list? It just seemed like an oddball thing, especially given that Wharton has a really strong network globally. I would argue second to only maybe HBS in terms of scope and international kind of breadth. And so it just occurred to me that, you know, and I know this person seems focused on the case method. They must be aware that while HBS is, you know, heaviest on case along with maybe Darden, that all the top schools, including Wharton, use the case method. I read hundreds of cases during my time at Wharton. And so I just hope this person digs deep and figures out all that stuff, because I think Wharton might be a good one to have on the list. Again, just would encourage them to take a peek. And I'm a homer, I'm biased, I went there, I get it. But I think it was the school I was like, why isn't that on this list? It didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
So any other thoughts on this one?
Yeah, no, you do bring up a good point in terms of Wharton. This candidate is applying only to the very best schools. Quite frankly, I think that's where they're going to belong. Tighten up on the long-term goal does make very good sense, Graham. So But I wish this person the best of luck, and yeah, wherever they land, it should be very good.
Yeah, they'll do well, for sure. All right, well, thanks to them for posting on the site. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 2. So this is a DecisionWire entry, and it comes from a candidate who is undecided as to where they're going to attend. They applied to Cornell, Duke, Michigan, Kellogg, Darden. They've been admitted at Cornell, Michigan, and Darden. They've got 3 offers on the table. They're going to start school this fall. They want to work in consulting. Their GMAT score was a 710, and they indicate in the notes that they are in between Ross and Cornell. And they wrote they love the culture, presumably at both programs, and they said, "The final decision is making me crazy. Any thoughts?" And that's when the peanut gallery on the site, you know, sprung into action. We had a whole bunch of comments on this, but I'll let you start, because this is an interesting one. They have these 3 offers, and they want to work in consulting. The only other detail that I wanted to share is, I believe they mentioned that they are originally from Latin America, and that they're thinking of staying in the U.S. after business school, but they're not concerned about where in the U.S. they stay. And I guess, presumably, you know, in my mind, there's a chance they would go back to Latin America in the longer term. But, you know, all they stated is that they're from Latin America and they intend to initially stay in the U.S. So I'll let you kind of kick things off, though. What do you think of these choices?
Yeah, I really like this this dilemma, as it were, because the candidate got admitted, as you say, to Cornell, to Ross, and to Darden, and they want consulting. So on the face of that, you look at Darden. They use the case method, much like Harvard, as we just talked about. And Darden's very, you know, is clearly considered a top, you know, a leading school if you're looking at consulting as one of your career options. So it's curious to me why they decided that their choice is actually between Johnson and Ross, and they'd sort of discounted Darden. And then I sort of read further into sort of their calculus and what they're thinking. And they're really focusing hard on the actual MBA experience. So over that 2 years, rather than necessarily the outcomes and the geography and so on and so forth. So I thought that was very interesting. And what's particularly appealing to this candidate is the Cornell Immersion Programs and the Ross MAP Program. So really sort of hands-on programs that they're looking for. So quite frankly, Graham, I just thought that was a really interesting wrinkle. And it sort of brought about a lot of debate on the site with various folks weighing in on the merits of each of the programs. All 3 programs are in the same tier. We would argue that Johnson is typically considered slightly lower within that tier than perhaps Ross and Darden, but they're all within the same tier. So there's really good reasons you could pick any of the 3 over the other 2. But I just thought it was really interesting that Darden had been discounted at this point, Graham.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's possible, and they did indicate that there's another kind of reason, which somewhere in the notes here, they said that if they don't go into consulting, they're thinking about tech. And I guess they're arguing that Cornell and Ross are a little bit stronger in tech. Presumably they've done their homework on that. We do know Cornell has the tech MBA, and there are a lot of reasons to believe that would be the case. So maybe that's some of it as well. It's an interesting, you know, choice. And I kind of welcome this focus on, you know, the actual experience. You often hear candidates, it's almost like, if I'm really cynical, sometimes I feel like there are some candidates out there who, if you're like, hey, just pay us the money for tuition, we'll put the school name on your resume, you don't even have to come, like they would be like, okay, you know, I'll take that. And so thinking about the 2 years you're going to spend in the program is really important. I cannot emphasize that enough. And so this person's doing that, and I like that. I also think that these programs are different in the sense that they're all in the same tier. One could make the argument to go to any of the one over the other, but they're they're different in terms of their setting. And, you know, I think of both Darden and Cornell as being in small towns or, you know, medium-sized towns with a real kind of collegiate, kind of college, close-knit community. Obviously, Michigan's in a more bustling, you know, like almost, it's a really animated city, Ann Arbor, that is still a college town, but it's on a bigger scale. And even the program's a little bit bigger. So they're just kind of slightly different experiences. I wondered if this person goes back to Latin America. I actually was wondering, like, wow, which of these schools does best in Latin America or in this person's home country or in the region? And I don't have the answer to that, but that would be something I would be doing some digging on. Like, is there an active Cornell, Ross, or Darden alumni club in their region? If so, how active is it? So I would be curious. I mean, because sometimes, especially in certain markets, you hear things like, oh, you know, the Ivy League is really well, you know, totally revered in my home country, and so Cornell might carry more weight because it's an Ivy. But then again, Michigan and UVA are both kind of what we would call public Ivies, right? So it's a tough choice. They're not going to go wrong. As we said, these are all great schools, and they're in the same tier. So, but I did think it was odd to remove Darden off the bat, but, you know, they got to narrow it down somehow. So, I don't know what to tell this person. It's a tough call.
If they want to work in New York City after the MBA, which program would you pick?
It's funny. Like, I think your instinct would say, oh, well, Cornell. Cornell's in New York State. It's, you know, a handful of hours away. There's a big Ivy League network generally in the northeast of the U.S. But I once went to a Michigan MBA alumni event in New York City that was like out of this world fabulous. There were like tons of people there. And so I actually think, frankly, Darden, Ross, and Cornell place a lot of people in New York. It's a tough call.
What about if they want to go to Northern California?
Then I think it gets a little, it's different. I think that, Ross has a campus in LA, if memory serves, it's for their executive MBA or something, but they have a presence out there. I think of, you know, again, that sort of the Ivy League network comes back to me a little bit with Cornell, in the sense that, you know, you have a lot of Ivy League folks around the world. And even though this is the funny thing, these schools that are Ivy Leagues, whether it's Yale or Wharton or Columbia or any of them, they're competing, right? You know, people are like, oh, this school's better than that, whatever. But once you go and you have a degree, everyone's pretty nice to each other, and they actually collaborate more than they compete on the alumni side of things. So just a silly example, I live in Paris. There's a Wharton alumni club, obviously, in Paris. But very often, the Wharton alumni club will team up with other Ivies, to whether that's Harvard or Columbia or whoever it might be, to do events. So there's a lot of collaboration and access to the broader network that might come into play. Yeah, this is a tough call. I don't know. we'll see. I'd be curious for them to update their post and let us know where they land. But they seem to be leaning a little bit towards Cornell, it seemed, in the discussion. Yeah. Or, I don't know. It's hard to tell from the back and forth. But there you have it.
Very good.
All right. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is another undecided entry. This person applied to Emory, UNC, UT Austin, and UVA Darden, and they ended up with offers at Emory with a scholarship. They didn't say how much the scholarship was, but they indicated it as being substantial. And then they also were accepted to UNC. So they have these two offers. They can't decide. They're starting this fall. They want to work in consulting, but they also mentioned it doesn't have to be MBB. They've got, you know, Accenture, A.T. Kearney, Booz Allen, Deloitte, KPMG. They have a whole bunch on their list, basically all the usual suspects. GMAT was 700, GPA a 3.0. And they mentioned in the note, I am really split between Keenan Flagler and Guzzetta. My plans to go into consulting, but I'm open to changing my mind and I'm not dead set on it. I love Emory's program and people, but I don't know if I want to end up in Atlanta long term. Keenan Flagler seems to be more balanced in terms of post-MBA locations and sectors. So that's the quandary. What do you make of this one, Alex?
Yeah, it's a very interesting discussion. Quite a few folks weighing in from the community. On the face of it, again, very, very comparable options. Guzzetta, Keenan Flagler, with money at Guzzetta sort of sweetening the pot there. We had a debate before coming on air if they're actually from the same tier. I'm convinced they are in the same tier. You weren't quite so convinced and maybe thought Keenan Flagler was in a tier slightly above Goizueta, which then would make sense in the sense that they didn't get money at Keenan Flagler, but they get money at Goizueta. So that sort of evens it out if you are of that inclination, even though I don't think I am personally. In terms of the diversity of options out of Keenan Flagler related to geography versus Goizueta, I think it's fair to say that Goizueta is in a bigger market in Atlanta versus the specific location of Keenan Flagler. So that certainly would create a stronger magnet for folks staying in that sort of Atlanta area. So I don't know if that's necessarily a positive or negative. I mean, it is a negative if you certainly don't want to work in Atlanta, I suppose. But yeah, I think this is an interesting choice. I frankly, unless the person has an aversion to being in Atlanta, I think Atlanta Goizueta might get my nod simply because of the scholarship offer. I think both programs offer opportunities to go into the types of consulting roles or the types of consulting firms that they're targeting. So to me, it's a little bit of a toss-up, Graham.
Yeah, it's tough because they didn't specify the dollar amount, but let's assume they say it's substantial. So let's assume it's half tuition or more. I think, as you say, they've got money from one. And so even if the one, Emory, is a little bit lower ranked or something than UNC, the money does it compensate. And so the only thing that did strike me is that they mentioned they're not really, it doesn't sound like they're super keen on being in Atlanta after school, or certainly it's not like a target for them. And I just worry that, you know, quite frankly, the UNC does have a broader geographic distribution of their MBA graduates around, you know, there's a bit more in California, there's a bit more in the Northeast. They're spread out much more so than Emory, where you see a pretty heavy concentration in the South. So that's, you know, that is what it is. The programs are not the same size either. I mean, Emory's quite small. UNC's a little bit bigger. And again, setting like a urban kind of, Atlanta-based Emory, whereas you've got, you know, UNC's in a kind of quintessential college town of Chapel Hill. It's a tough call. I think I would also argue that on the margin, if they do want to work in like MBB, even though they're saying that's not a, that don't have to, that, you know, UNC is probably sending more people to, you know, McKinsey or whatnot. But it's a tough call. It's a personal preference, I think, at this point, given for this candidate, given that there's money on the table too, right? So I don't know what their financial situation is. And it does sound like the money being offered from Emory is enough such that they could certainly justify, you know, taking it, right? So, yeah, this is really their call. Both are good programs. I would also mention that area of the United States is like, you know, it's a growing region. You know, a lot of the growth and activity in the U.S. is, or you know, in kind of Texas and then in the Southeast, right? So those are the two areas of the U.S. that are doing pretty well. And, you know, people are kind of flocking to those regions a little bit, right? So I understand, that there's some opportunity there, whether they go to one or the other, and both have excellent brands and are known, you know, outside of the South, right? So tough call. I don't know. So you would tell them to go to Emory, though, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I think Emory is a great choice if Atlanta is somewhat palatable or even in that sort of more general region. But, you know, let's say, for example, that they want to be in New York City. Look to see if there's a club, you know, look at the alumni club in New York City for Emory. It's not like they don't send folks up there.
Right.
It's just that their concentration is going to be in that sort of Atlanta Southeast region. So I mean, at the end of the day, if you're going to go into consulting, sure, the scholarship might not have much of an impact in the long run. But these schools are, again, in my book, similar tiers.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, whether we might agree to disagree on, you know, where they rank and stuff, or whether one's a little bit ahead of the other, but clearly the money from the one levels the playing field a bit, as I said earlier. So, yeah understandable. I wish this person the best of luck. It's a tough choice. We get it. And I, you know, the other thing is it's so difficult with the pandemic, because ordinarily I would say go spend like a weekend or a few days at each of these programs and really see what you think up close. Unfortunately, they're going to do all that virtually this year. But I've heard good things about a lot of the virtual events, so it sounds like it's still giving people a flavor of what to expect. But yeah, interesting choice. Well, I want to thank everyone who posted this week that we were able to cover. And Alex, as always, thanks to you for picking these out. We'll do this in 1 week's time. I did want to ask everyone to please tell one person you know about the podcast. This is the time of year where many of you are into school and heading off, and we need to make sure that, you know, those coming in your footsteps learn about the podcast as a great resource to get ready for applications and applying to business school. So thanks as always, Alex, and I guess we'll see you in 1 week.
Very good. Thank you very much, Graham. Stay safe, everyone.